Hey, everybody, and welcome to Viewing Angles, the only movie podcast on the face of the earth. I am one of your hosts, Dan Leo, and I've got Rob Mecki with me. Rob, say hi to the people.
Hello, people. Coming to you live from Austin, Texas.
And I'm coming at you live from Chicago, Illinois. And I don't really know what people are supposed to do with that information. I think if you live
They're
in Austin, you feel...
They're supposed to stalk us.
Right, yeah. I really want a stalker. I think that's a good measure of fame when you get your first stalker.
You know you made it when you get a stalker.
Yeah. That's probably like quantifiable, because I know Taylor Swift has a few stalkers.
Yes.
And while it's bad for her and bad for everybody when you have one, it's a true signifier of being famous. You're like, no one is stalking, you know, Hillary Swank.
Exactly. It's like a rite of passage. It's kind of like you're not a real doctor until one of your patients dies on you, right?
100%. Yeah. Right?
We need stalkers.
Like, I mean, I think that it's like a general rule is that if one of your patients hasn't died on you, then you are de facto not a doctor. So if there's any doctors listening to this right now and you haven't killed somebody, now is the time to strike.
Yeah. That's why so many chiropractors kill their patients, because they want to be considered
real doctors.
Exactly.
Yeah. It only takes so many conversations about how you're not a real doctor until you have to murder somebody to prove you're a doctor.
Mm-hmm. It's coming. If you know somebody.
Keep going. No, yeah, keep going. I was gonna.
No, go on.
Yeah. Speaking of absolute murderers. Godzilla, King of the Monsters, ruled the box office this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
I tried to think of something better than was King of the Box Office, so dude, I think that was a little bit better.
You fucking slayed that segue just like doctors slaying patients.
Yeah. Great. That's a great way to segue back into medical talk. We're going to talk about doctors for the next few weeks.
Roundabout.
Yes, very roundabout. So Godzilla, King of the Monsters, it came in at number one on the box office. At like 47 million, which domestically very solid, but definitely $30 million less than the first Godzilla of this reboot.
Yeah.
Came in at. So overall disappointment.
I think that this had more competition than the original Godzilla. I don't remember what else was playing the weekend that the Godzilla reboot came out back in 2014.
I feel like it was in the fall. I think
I don't think it was in the fall.
Yeah, no, maybe it was just starting to get warm.
Yeah.
It might have been the same exact time. And I'm just trying to like, I remember it was at night and that makes me think it was colder.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was not competing against anything as strong as the Aladdin reboot or the live action remake of Aladdin. So I can see why this one had a lower reception. I also just think that like the reviews came out a bit early. They weren't great, but I think from what I've been hearing, the fans are very happy with this movie because it's a lot less focused on the humans than the reboot. It takes itself significantly less seriously, and it's monsters fighting. You know, it lives up to the name.
Right. I think all we really want is kaiju fighting, and I think that's been my biggest issue with every other Godzilla movie I've seen. Which, granted, has not been that many, but I don't care about the people. Like, the people are just getting in the way of Godzilla.
Especially, like, when the characters aren't that important or not interesting. And I think that, spoilers for the 2014 Godzilla movie, but that movie could have been so much better if they didn't kill off Bryan Cranston within the first, like, 40 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
He was the most interesting person in that movie, and then they just replace him as the main character with fucking Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Yeah, and Elizabeth Olsen, is she also in that movie too?
Oh yeah, yeah, she plays his wife.
Yeah,
like the two most cardboard cutout white people. Like,
right? Yeah, just looking like stupefied the entire time.
Yes.
Yeah, there were some really great moments in that, but none of them involved people except for the what do they call those? The halo drops, high altitude, low.
Yeah, halo
opening.
Drops. Yeah.
Yeah, when they do the halo drop scene, it's like, wah! And they're like going, you can see them going down to like the light. There's some very good VFX in these movies, and I think that cannot be understated. Because usually, if I'm going to see a movie called Godzilla, and Godzilla is fighting different monsters, and there's cool lighting and the special effects are good. Sure. That what else do you need? I haven't seen this movie, by the way. I can't stress that enough.
Yeah, neither of us have seen this film.
Right, for different reasons. And but it's I want to see it. I'm upset that I spent $16 to not see it.
So you didn't even get a refund?
No, because apparently the refund on movie tickets is there isn't a refund.
Cool. That's a cool policy.
Yeah. I mean, it's for any kind of show that just expires. They're just like, oh, you bought the tickets to the wrong theater. I guess you're an idiot and you deserve to lose your money, which I can't entirely disagree with them. Like, it is entirely my fault.
We call this the dumbass tax.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, if I $16 is a cheap price to pay to learn a lesson forever.
Yeah, that's like the price of a euro.
Yeah, exactly. In today's economy, you betcha. And then number two at the box office is Aladdin, the movie that we didn't review last week because our lives are difficult.
Yeah, we're very busy people. We're real adults. We have to work Memorial to put food Day. On the table.
It's hard. We work jobs.
Yeah. How else do you think we can afford to waste $16 on movies that we didn't go see?
Yeah, Jesus Christ. I must be fucking rich. So I assume people are still watching it. It had a pretty reasonable drop off of like negative 53.2%. Mm-hmm. That's a direct number. I feel like that's less than I thought. Usually you go up to like 58% to like 60% range. This is very, not very, but it's like on the lighter end of it. I think it's going to be completely destroyed next week, though. I think it might drop out. Because of, first of all, Rocket Man, which is number three at 25 million, I think that might actually see a more consistent reign.
Oh, yeah.
I think the word of mouth on this movie is pretty good. And, you know, that's the movie we're going to be reviewing towards the end of the podcast. But already I can tell you that everything that I've said to people about this movie has been positive.
Same. This movie is worth seeing. I do think it definitely has legs. Unfortunately, the chances of it out earning like Bohemian Rhapsody are
zero.
Slim. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it'll knock past Aladdin in the next week. We might see some positive movement because Dark Phoenix is next week and the reviews from that have not been super positive.
Oh, yeah. It's officially the worst reviewed X-Men film of all time. What a way to end the series.
Oh, is it really the worst reviewed of all time?
Yeah, it's worse than Origins.
God damn it.
Yep.
Origins is so bad.
So I wonder how that's going to do at the box office. I feel like that movie honestly might make as much as Godzilla.
I've seen a lot of press around it. Like, they are doing a really good marketing push for it.
Yeah, but reviews matter so much more in today's age than they used to. Like, I think Origins made a shit ton of money because that's before people really cared about Rotten Tomatoes and Metacritic. So, yeah,
I mean, and also I think this has a few things going against it and a few things going for it. The against things are obviously it is the worst reviewed X-Men movie. It also doesn't have the X-Men branding on it. It's Dark Phoenix.
Yeah.
Not X-Men Dark Phoenix.
Do you think that's a Disney mandate?
No, I think that's probably what they went with early on. X-Men Dark Phoenix. Yeah, that is a good question. I haven't heard anything. I've heard a lot about this movie has been changed in the last like few months because of its similarity to Captain Marvel. I have not heard anything about the title being changed.
Wait, what? It's similarity to Captain Marvel?
Apparently the climax was very similar to how Captain Marvel ended, and they did a decent amount of reshoots and post-production fixes to make it stylistically different.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about like some of the imagery from Dark Phoenix and what we know about Captain Marvel seeing it, it seems like there could be some overlap for powerful female hero with hair that might flow up and get bright and she can shoot stuff. And
yeah, I guess. Sure.
Space.
Yes, that's a good point. I did not think about space.
Right. So I do think that Sophie Turner is definitely going to work for it, though. I think people are still, despite some of the fan reactions for Game of Thrones, I think she is well known enough to drive some box office.
Yeah, we'll see. I predict it comes in under 100 million.
Me too. Oh, 100%. Yeah.
I would say it comes in under 80 million. Again, I think it's probably going to be within the 50 to 60 million opening weekend range.
I would 100% agree with you. I think it would be lucky, I think, if it got between 50 and 60.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any tracking numbers, which makes me feel like it's going to be bad, though.
Yeah. I want Godzilla to outperform Dark Phoenix. That'd be hilarious.
I mean, but Dark Phoenix is already dead. Like the this movie.
Yeah, this franchise is dead. It's
already written off.
Yeah.
Like, this is an incidental. Simon Kinberg is writing and directing it for some reason. Is that the guy's name? It's
Simon Kinberg? Kinberg?
Kinberg? Yeah, yes.
He's, I believe so.
Awful.
Wait, what did he do before this?
X-Men 3?
Really? No, that was Brett Ratner.
No, he wrote it, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so he's rewriting his own movie.
Last Stand, and then he wrote and directed this one.
Oh, God.
Which has got to be, like, awful, like this, the executive producers on this who hired him. Like, what an awful move for me to make. Like, one of the most maligned, because there are worse X-Men movies, but none more maligned, I feel like, than X3. And have this guy come back and then make a worse movie.
Right. Maybe he begged them to give him another shot. He's like, I can make a good adaptation of the Dark Phoenix story arc.
10 years fucking later.
Yeah.
With these new actors without any charisma. Turner, like, no offense to her, but like Famke Janssen is way more charismatic.
She's Jean Grey. She's Jean Grey to everyone.
Yeah, for all intents and purposes. And they can't just spend like all Apocalypse not building up these characters and then shove them into a huge one of the most well-known narratives in comic book history.
Yeah. Oh boy, this is gonna be a fun one to watch at the Draft House. Gonna get shit-faced for this.
That's probably how they want you. That's honestly, I'm waiting for the first movie to come out with their own official drinking game.
They did it with, well, not official drinking game, but I remember for the press screenings for like Sausage Party, they just gave all of the critics there a shit ton of alcohol before they screened it. Like, good call.
Right. Yeah. Oh, 100%. It's still like one of the worst movies I've seen in theaters.
No, Sausage Party's amazing.
We'll talk about this later.
Okay.
First, let's get into the highs, the lows, and the toss-ups of the week. And they're all trailers.
Oh, yeah. The first high, the long-awaited sequel to Batman vs. Superman.
I hate you. I hate you
Ford
so much.
Ford v. Ferrari. It's not even Ford vs. Ferrari. It's Ford
it's not
v.
Even
Ferrari.
Funny anymore. Ford vs. v. Ferrari.
Yeah.
Which I thought it was going to be a different movie.
What?
I thought it was going to be a movie about Henry Ford versus John Ferrari, whatever the fuck his name is. I thought it was going to be like a, and this might be like how much I don't know about cars.
John Ferrari.
Who is the founder of Ferrari, Robert, without touching your keyboard?
Enzo.
Okay. Okay. You do know that.
Yeah. Dude.
Pretend that's a commonly known fact.
You think so little of me. It is. So, okay, here's why. Aside from the fact that this movie looks good, it's got...
Are you about to drop some weird, like, Filipino thing where everyone in the Philippines loves car racing?
Absolutely not. People outside of America love car racing. I mean, hell, a lot of people in America love car racing. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely not a Filipino thing because... Enzo, my great grandpa was named Enzo. So,
oh, really?
Ferrari isn't it's Italian.
oh, right. Yeah. Your dad is super. Is he?
My dad
is
Italian. Yeah,
my dad
is Italian. My mom is Filipino.
Right. Yeah. I don't know why I automatically went to Filipino. As that would be a weird quirk instead of Italians being into an Italian car maker.
But yeah. But also, yeah. my dad is a car boy. And I'm a bit of a car boy, not as much as my father. He definitely knows more about the history and the industry and everything than I do. But I'm excited because I think that this movie will bridge the gap between film boys and car boys. And I'm hoping that there's a little more overlap in that Venn diagram that I'll be able to talk to more people about, like, you know, normally. I just want to have more conversation topics. That's all I'm asking for. And this movie is going to give it to me.
No, I like, you know, and I've, of the car movies I've seen, Rush obviously is a big one. The Ron Howard joint that
Rush is
did
fantastic.
Not get that much love back in the day. But if you go back and watch Rush, you've got Liam Hemsworth at his like sexual peak. And
Chris Hemsworth.
Who did I say?
Liam Hemsworth.
Yeah, no, Liam Hemsworth is not even close to being at any sexual peak. Yeah. Chris Hemsworth. And then what's the other guy? It's
Daniel Brühl.
Daniel Brühl, yeah. Great, great movie. Ron Howard, like, at his peak, like, up there with not as good as Apollo 13, but it's in, like, his top five, I would say.
Oh, easy. Yeah, and I do think that Rush, to me, is one of the best sports movies of all time. It's up there with Warrior, which is the only other good sports movie of all time.
Okay.
But that
Moneyball?
Movie...
Moneyball? I'm sorry.
Well, sure, whatever. You know, if you think baseball is a sport.
and if racing is a sport, then baseball is a sport, Robert. Come
you
on.
You don't take turns in racing. You literally take turns in racing, but you don't take,
you take turns
in racing.
You take turns in every sport.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
Racing is you just, ball, you I fucking win. You just fucking go for it. You finish first.
Baseball is, there's nothing more pure than baseball. You get a
what
turn,
you
then
what do you
I
mean?
Get a
There's
turn.
There's nothing more pure than baseball.
Yeah, I'm
chess
I'm
is
saying.
More pure than baseball.
Well, I mean, chess is similar
to baseball. You know, when you really
yeah,
think
but,
about
but
it,
but you are still doing a pre-designed spot. Like you are still every move that you're making is influencing the makeup of what's going on at that moment. In baseball, it's literally you get a shot. You get your people up and we'll get our people up and we'll hit the ball and you'll feel the ball. And then the next time you get your people up and we'll hit the ball.
Yeah,
like it is
that's
the
not
same
what happens.
Exact.
That's not what happens in racing. That's why I love racing.
Yeah, right. That's why I'm saying that baseball is the purest sport.
All right.
Oh, I'm saying they're all playing with different cars.
I guess we'll call baseball a sport. What were we talking about before?
Ford v. Ferrari.
Ford v. Ferrari.
I'm excited for this. I like James Mangold. He's obviously proven himself with some heavier stuff from Logan. You might remember him as the director of X-Men or Wolverine.
Yeah, he did the Wolverine, which is probably one of his less strong films.
It's got a really strong first and second act.
I agree. I think that the first two acts of that film are real solid. And then the Iron Samurai comes in at the end. And that went down the drain pretty
right,
quickly.
It's dumb. And he also did 310 of Yuma.
Solid.
Which is did he direct that or just write it?
No, he directed it.
Which is 310 of Yuma, which is a great remake of an old
contemporary Western. Yeah. He also did Night and Day, which nobody remembers.
Is that Tom Cruise and
Cameron Diaz? Yep.
Okay, yeah. No one ever saw that.
I saw it. I still don't remember it. All I know is that they make jokes about Tom Cruise's last name a lot because his last name is Knight. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's got like, and he did Walk the Line too, which is another solid movie.
Yeah.
So he's got a solid track record and he's really only been getting tighter. Obviously, I think I'd probably say Logan is his best movie.
Agreed.
And then I would say 310 of Yuma, and then who cares about the rest? I haven't seen Girl Interrupted, though, and he actually directed that, too.
Oh, really? That's the one, I don't know why, but I always get Girl Interrupted confused with Chasing Amy.
I thought you were going to say Boy Interrupted.
Is there a Boy Interrupted?
I think there is, but it's not even close to being the same movie.
It's the porn parody.
It's Boy Interrupted. It's a 2000. Okay, yeah, it is totally a thing. But it's about like a guy who takes like a kid in or something.
He steals a kid.
Yeah, he steals a child. Oh no, it's a completely different movie than what I was thinking of. What's the one with it where Hugh Grant, where he takes care of like another kid.
Oh, Boy Interrupted?
Sure. All right. All right. Well, we'll figure that out later.
Let's not chase this rabbit down the hole.
Yeah. So you start talking about Ferrari versus Ford.
I mean, I feel like we talked about it quite a bit. The biggest tidbits that I think we already went over, Matt Damon, Christian Bale, mm-hmm. both being in the film. They look like even solid performances.
Yeah, no, honestly, I mean, it looks like Matt Damon is doing a Southern accent and Christian Bale is doing a whole acting thing.
Yeah. I do like that they're not playing. Like, I remember when I first heard that these two are going to be in this film, I kind of was on the same of the same mindset that you had. I thought it was going to be one of them playing Ford, the other one playing Ferrari.
Yeah.
But no, so Matt Damon is playing Carroll Shelby, and Christian Bale is playing, what's his name? Ken, Grant? It's not Ken Miles. It's not Ken Grant, is it?
No, I don't know. I just made that up.
Okay. But no, he's playing a engineer who helps develop a car that is faster than the Ferrari so that Ford can beat Ferrari at the 24-hour Le Mans race.
All right. I want you to answer before we move on to the next thing, because we've been taking too long. Answer this next question with a yes or no and nothing else.
Sure.
Does the fact that Henry Ford was a Nazi sympathizer affect how you will feel about this movie?
No.
Okay. So the low of the week
is that Robert is a Nazi sympathizer.
No, hey, we're not talking about it anymore. The low of the week is that The Lion King is just lions.
Lions. Have you seen the promo shit?
Yeah.
It's just lions.
Like, I thought it's just lions.
Yeah, but I thought they would at least give them some unique characteristics so they're identifiable in the film itself. But it's just fucking lions.
So to clarify, your issue with the recently released Lion King posters is that they all just look like lions.
Yes.
Okay.
There are no identifiable characteristics on any of these characters.
I agree that they all look the same. I'm like, isn't that the whole point of these like reboot movies, is that they all look like the animals? With every other one of these properties, with the Jungle Book, Mowgli, blah, 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 they've all had these different animals to bounce off of. This one is mostly like lions.
Yeah, but you could at least make them look unique. Like, give them different color schemes, give them scars, give them different facial structures. Like, these animals are created digitally. You can make them look like whatever you want. Like, and Pumbaa looks like a fucking nightmare.
He's a warthog. Of course he's a nightmare.
Yeah, but warthogs, I feel like, don't actually look like that. Like, this, he's got like a perpetual smile on his face. I cannot wait to hear Seth Rogen's come out of that fucking warthog. It's going to be amazing. It's also going to be terrifying.
This movie is such a dumb idea.
And it's going to make $1 billion.
Yeah, it's going to make over $1 billion. It's going to beat, this is going to beat Avatar as like the number one movie of all time.
Oh, God. I do think it's funny, too, that James Earl Jones, they got new people for everyone except Mufasa. So I wonder how Matthew
Broderick? Did you say Bodrick?
Yeah.
Broderick, right?
It's Broderick.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder how he feels about
bad, probably
being replaced.
I mean, he's also married to Sarah Jessica Parker, so
that's true. He also killed a family in Ireland drunk driving and got off scot-free.
I forget. Oh my god. Yeah, let's y'all can investigate that yourselves.
Yeah, but please do. It's fascinating. You'll never look at him the same way again.
It is very strange. Yeah, but also he kind of looks like the type of guy he'd be a great role in, like somebody who killed somebody. You ever watch Oz?
No.
It opens with like some guy being sentenced to like a long time in prison for killing somebody like while driving drunk. And he's like this like lawyer or something, this like, you know, guy, a guy in a suit. And they gradually just turn him into like the worst of the worst in the prison.
Yeah.
But that's what Matthew Broderick could be, I feel like.
Totally.
Yeah. All right. Toss up of the week. What is it, Rob?
Rambo, Last Blood.
Tell me about how you feel about it.
I'm pretty excited for it. I wish Sylvester Stallone was directing this one, because Rambo 4, the one that's just called Rambo, is great. I love that movie. That movie's so much fun.
That movie is really great. When was the last time you saw it? And tell me about how you felt when you watched it, because I bet I had similar feelings.
Probably like 2010, but I felt like I was watching something illegal, and it was awesome.
It's definitely like a super like violent version of it. Like, I haven't really seen, I think I've only seen First Blood and Rambo.
Yeah, same. I haven't seen Rambo 2 or 3, so I went from First Blood, which is like a legitimately great movie. Like, that's a landmark film, and it's proof that Sylvester Stallone is an actual actor. And going from that to Rambo 2008 is such a tonal shift that I'm so there for, because that is the first movie, and really I think the only movie I've seen, where people get turned into hamburger helper on a regular basis.
Yeah, it's extremely violent.
He rips a dude's throat out with his bare hands in that movie.
Yeah. Now the question is, in, because this looks like a continuation of last of regular Rambo, but just against cartel members.
Yeah.
And this one just feels like more pointed. Like, I remember very specifically an interview with Sylvester Stallone where he's talking about the, you know, the first Rambo reboot movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, all right, we want to make another Rambo. And he's like, because it was when they were rebooting all those old movies from the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, okay, but we have to do it in Burma because shit's bad in Burma. And I want to like bring light to this issue.
Yeah.
And it felt like, obviously, he's like murdering like militants and like all this.
Yeah.
But there is some kind of like semblance of he's doing a, like, there's attention being brought to this part of the world that people don't normally look at.
Yeah.
This one feels way more jingoistic for some reason.
I think that is honestly the marketing. Like, we won't know. I won't be surprised if it is more jingoistic.
You think it's gonna be like Day of the Soldado? Like, because I think we talked, I know I talked about it in our review of it,
mm-hmm.
but there were people in my theater who were like hooping and hollering when like people were getting like killed.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm like, yeah, man, this is not that type of movie. Like, at least it's not supposed to. But the way it was marketed, I think, was a very.
Well, it's the same thing with The Wolf of Wall Street. Like, that movie's clearly a critique of like the excesses of capitalism. And yet you still have people like hooting and hollering when he's, you know, throwing money off a yacht and talking about how fucked the feds are.
Right. Yeah. Everyone's like, yeah, you know, screw this. Yeah. The feds and the cops, they're just trying to get in. Like, nah, man, they're trying to like help you out. Like, they're trying to get this guy. Just fuck this guy.
Yeah. Fuck the people that are trying to stop you from having success, because everybody thinks they're going to be the next Jordan Belfort.
Right. So does that really like a part of Death of the Artist, where we're talking about once a movie has been created, there is no like containing the reaction to it. The people can react to it like whatever way they want.
I mean, I think people can react to whatever they want. But, you know, I think like viewer response and reader response is like the most base form of analysis of a film. And
true.
So my like the example I like to point to is like Starship Troopers. Like, people can't, like, that movie came out and everybody was criticizing Paul Verhoeven because they're just like, oh, this is just like, it's just a propaganda film. Like, this is just a normal fucking fascist starship propaganda film. And people weren't looking into it that deeply. And without really looking at what the artist's intent was, I think it took a while, but people started realizing like, oh no, this is a critique of the system. Like, this is a critique of fascism veiled as a fascist piece of propaganda.
Right. So, and that's the, it's like the satire paradox. And like, where, you know,
good satire will come off as like just a legitimate,
authentic.
Yeah.
Yes. It's the Colbert Report effect.
Mm-hmm.
How both sides, like liberals loved it for sending up the conservatives.
And Republicans were too stupid to understand that they were being sent up. Yeah.
No, they're just like, oh, it's like looking at me in a like a funhouse mirror, like, oh, this is how liberals like view us. Like, this is trying to send up the liberals.
Oh, man. I wish that I was flexible enough to do those mental gymnastics, man.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. Malcolm Gladwell has a good famous New Yorker writer and writer of books. Malcolm Gladwell has a good podcast on revisionist history about that. I think it is called The Satire Paradox.
Yeah.
If y'all want to look it up. But that is beside the point, because we got to get into our regularly scheduled review.
Yeah.
And that review is the Elton John biopic Rocket Man. Starring Taron Egerton. Is it Egerton or Edgerton?
I think it's Edgerton.
Edgerton. It's confusing these British people.
I've heard more people pronounce it Edgerton.
It's spelled weird. It's spelled E-G-E. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
Edgerton.
Fucking Welshman.
And Richard Madden and Jamie Gunn. Is that what his name is?
Jamie Bell.
Bryce Dallas Howard, for some reason.
That was weird.
And is there anybody else in this movie that we need to mention?
No, I think we got all the big ones. You know, there are no Mike Myers cameos in this film. So,
yeah, thank God. So this movie, yeah. Who was it directed by, Robin? Why does that matter?
It was directed by Dexter Fletcher, who was the interim director for Bohemian Rhapsody after Bryan Singer got canned.
Yeah, so this is the movie he had complete control over.
Yes.
And this is the movie. This is the guy that Rami Malek allegedly called and said, listen, you got to get over here and fix this, because anything's better than this fucking guy.
Yeah, so this movie is proof that Dexter Fletcher is the reason that anything in Bohemian Rhapsody was redeemable.
Right, yeah. This is the real bridge of... Oh, Bryan Singer was so shitty at X-Men Apocalypse.
Yeah.
That, like, Bohemian Rhapsody would have been a complete shit show, and Dexter Fletcher
salvaged it.
Yeah.
Man.
Didn't get a directing credit on the highest grossing music biopic of all time.
Yeah. Oh, fuck that. I mean, at least we still got this film, because this film is great.
Right. I got to go back and watch Eddie the Eagle now.
Did he direct that too?
Yeah. Why do I know that? Like, why?
I don't know. I forgot that was a movie.
Yeah, that's how we met Edgerton, I believe.
Wait, was Edgerton in that too? I don't.
He was Eddie the Eagle, motherfucker.
I thought Hugh Jackman was Eddie the Eagle.
No. Hugh Jackman was his trainer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How do you train someone for a jump like that? You're just like.
I guess we have to watch the movie.
yeah, I guess that's... Tune in next week for our review of Eddie the Eagle.
yeah, exactly. It'll be on our new segment called What the Fuck Did I Just Watch?
Yeah.
Yeah, but he did get an executive producer credit on Bohemian Rhapsody, which helps.
Cool. Hopefully, he should be getting a hefty paycheck from that, I hope.
Yeah, definitely. I hope he got points. Which, of course, he did not. Yeah. I think that let's talk about what this movie concept is. It is a biopic of Elton John. And it is told it tells his life from his early childhood to his recovery from drugs.
Yeah.
And spoiler alert, he is still alive. but you knew this.
I hate it when you spoil history.
In a phantasmagorical jukebox musical way. You have multiple characters singing songs. You have the songs being sung in different ways than they were before. Mm-hmm. But everyone's doing their own singing.
Yeah. And Taron Egerton can sing, which is awesome.
And he really kills it as Elton John, I think.
Absolutely.
He's the best part of a pretty good movie.
Yeah. God. And from the get-go, slight spoilers. But this is within the first couple minutes of the film. I love how they framed the narrative of this film with him, the reason that he's retelling his story. And I like that it's from his perspective too, because it gives it makes a little more sense for them to have it in all these fantastical dreamlike sequences.
Yeah.
Is that he's just retelling his memories to this recovery group that he enters within the first minutes of the film. And I think that's a super smart framing device. And God, everything about this movie just kind of took me by surprise because I was going into it with the same expectations of I had for Bohemian Rhapsody. And since that movie was such a boring disappointment, I was kind of expecting the same from this. And boy, was I surprised.
Yeah, I was surprised about every I was surprised by this movie at every level. And I think it will go down as one of the great musical biopics of all time, because I think that the way that it uses the music in the way that we all want to think about it.
Yeah.
It is. We don't want to see people writing the music.
Yeah. We don't want to hear like, that's a good beat. We should make a song out of that. Like,
oh yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. We don't want to hear the actual like mechanical production of the music, but we want to hear the songs, and we want to hear the songs tell the story.
Yeah.
And I think that's what this movie does so well. It treats the songs like they were heard by someone who was listening to them.
Yeah, it treats the songs almost as like they're like projections of whatever emotion Elton was feeling at the time. And not just sonically, but visually as well, because this movie is a musical at its core. Like, not like it's not a not just like a musical biopic, it's a musical. Like, you have choreography, you got beautiful staging, it's
amazing costumes.
Yeah, this movie kills like it.
Yeah, I you know, and there are obviously some with every when you're trying to match songs that already exist and have existed for, you know, 30-40 years,
mm-hmm.
it's gonna be sometimes a little janky to insert these songs into a narrative that's trying to tell its own story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's going to be a little bit of a rough part as things just don't always fit perfectly together. But I think that when it leans into how weird it is, when it doesn't stay, you know, narratively close to the meaning of the song, when it gets more phantasmagorical, when it gets more metaphorical visually, that's when it really shines. I'm thinking of Rocket Man. I'm thinking of Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting, which I think Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting was one of the most enjoyable song and dance numbers, one of the most enjoyable pieces of entertainment I have experienced like this year.
Yeah.
It was amazing. I loved it.
It was great. Oh, man, I want Dexter Fletcher to do musical biopics for a shit ton of different artists now. Just give him the rights to all these different musical biopics. I want to see his take on all of it.
And I think the biggest attraction from this movie is that it will get compared to Bohemian Rhapsody at every turn.
Yes, absolutely.
But I think that there is something to say of how this movie felt extraordinarily authentic.
Yeah, and I think maybe part of that, too, is because Elton John, from what I've read, had a heavy hand in the portrayal of himself in this film. And he was very much like, I was fucked up. Like, I was very fucked up, and I want you to show that. Compared to how Queen was trying to sanitize their biography for Bohemian Rhapsody. Elton John is very much, like you were saying, leaning into it, leaning into the insanity of his rise to stardom. And another thing about this film that I really enjoyed is that it's an R-rated musical, which is rare enough on its own. Like, I honestly, the last R-rated musical I can think of is probably like Sweeney Todd.
An R-rated musical where none of the songs would require it to be R.
Yes.
Like, it's not like these songs are filled with curse words sexual.
These are pop songs.
Yeah, these are songs that are probably on like that your kids will sing.
These
in
are
choir.
Songs that have been sung on kids bop albums.
Yeah, exactly. Kids bops, like singing to the oldies.
Yeah.
These songs are on there.
But
in this movie is a hard, I mean, not like a super hard R.
Yeah, it's not super hard.
I didn't see anything where I'm like, but apparently it's the first gay sex scene to be filmed by a major studio.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Huh. I guess so. I can't really think of any other examples of that. That's cool. That's reason enough to celebrate this film. But yeah, this movie
finally
is,
we got penetration.
Finally. Oh, God. And it was just two insanely attractive people. But this movie...
Isn't it funny that two actors from Game of Thrones played John Reed in two different movies?
Ah, didn't even think about that.
Baelish, whatever that guy's name is, the guy who played Baelish, played John Reed in Bohemian Rhapsody.
That's crazy.
The same guy. Same guy who got Queen punched by Elton John in the face.
God damn. Is that true? I want to believe it's true. I want to believe Elton John signed off on it.
That whole situation was true? I mean, I bet it's true. That's a pretty heavy accusation to lay on somebody.
Yeah. But yeah, I just love that this movie is rated R, like you said, not because of the music, but because of it's about Elton John's struggle with addiction to everything. and he lays it out pretty well at the beginning of the film.
Yeah. And the way that it's told from the standpoint of recovery is an interesting idea because you're not living, you're not like having the excess of those moments. Everything is framed in a way of that you know that it's bad.
Yeah.
Right when it's happening. It does not glorify it at all. Like we were talking about with Wolf of Wall Street. You have people like hooping and hollering. I feel like this is not a very glamorous tale.
Yeah.
You see the extravagance that it's normally expressed in a biopic with musicians. It's like they go and buy nice stuff or, you know, they're out at fancy places. This one, the extravagance is really explored as he's getting more famous. He's getting more at one with himself.
Mm-hmm.
And that is expressing itself in these crazy costumes. And so you have that part of the extravagance, but it's always put in this way of this guy is trying to please everybody. He is stoned all the time. Like all his relationships are like fucked up and he's got to put on this crazy persona for everybody.
Yeah. And I think that
everyone loves it.
The pacing in this film is so fucking good. And I think a big part of it is too, is like the second act during like his true rise to fame. I wouldn't call it a montage, but the scenes transition so smoothly from like his drug fueled nights into like going to the concerts the next day and how he just kind of falls out of the sky in costume, walks out onto stage, moves on to the next one. Like it's all filmed so well and so smartly that it doesn't feel just like a Bohemian Rhapsody montage of them just like, we're going to play some concerts and then we're going to have like the names of whatever city they're in pop up on screen. Like, oh, so, you know, you're going there, you know, they're going there. Like you get to see him literally lost in a daze of drugs and sex and alcohol, going from concert to concert, changing costumes and just like getting more and more lost in the persona that he's created for himself.
Yeah, I think it does a really great job of transitioning from emotional states using music, simultaneously expressing that in a visual medium, but then also changing the meaning even at different points throughout the song. Starting with Benny of the Jets is like a good example of where it starts in one way, it goes in a bunch of crazy different directions, each one painting a different scene, but it's still going with the lyrics.
Yeah.
I think that is definitely the best part about the movie, just the way that it uses music. I know we've talked about it before.
I mean, it's a musical biopic, and like that's really right, it has to.
Exactly. It really, the only job it has is play these songs in a way that I haven't heard them before.
And it does
make and make me like them in a different way.
Yeah.
And it did it almost in every case.
Yeah. This is a film that I actually like. I know it's a meme that the Bohemian Rhapsody soundtrack was released on vinyl because it's like that's just a Queen soundtrack. But this is something I would actually buy on vinyl because they are different renditions of Elton John's classics, like sung by Taron Egerton and company. And they're great.
Yeah. I think there's another, I'll say one more critique of it, and then I'll say my favorite scene in the movie, and that my one critique is that sometimes it is a little hokey, especially at the end. It's a little on the nose.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's hard to be subtle in while also making this big bombastic musical, but I think it has been done before. I think there's a lot of subtlety in musicals like La La Land or how you were saying Sweeney Todd. Like it is, you have like little moments of introspection and being able to like connect the dots on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this sometimes is really on the nose. My favorite scene that I have been thinking about is Elton John composing your song and the way it all plays out. And that's all I want to say about that.
Yeah.
Because I think it's really good.
That was.
And I think
that
if you like.
That was so touching.
If you like music and you appreciate the production of it, I think you're really going to like this movie.
Yeah. I agree.
And that's all I have to say about that. I think you should see it in the theaters.
Yeah. I agree completely. I think if there are any big critiques I had of the film, it's that I think it does. And it's kind of hard to circumvent this with a musical biopic, especially in like a post Walk Hard world, because it definitely hits all the same notes that like all of the musical biopics hit. Because that's just a pretty common thing for musicians to deal with at this point.
He never once paid for drugs. Not once.
But I do think that this film does quite a bit to remedy that by just, again, leaning into the insanity of it all. And just the presentation of it is so good that I'm like, that's fine. You know, it's a recipe that works. But if you can present it in a way that is fresh, I'm totally cool with it. God. Yeah, I can't even tell you which musical number I think was my favorite of the film. But I think it also might be Saturday Nights because, holy shit, it's so good. I can't wait for that clip to be uploaded to YouTube so I can just put it on loop.
Yeah, no, I haven't had one of these experiences. The last one I probably had this experience was Burning, which is on Netflix right now.
Yeah, check it out.
I was just thinking about like day after day. And then honestly, I can't think of another movie, maybe like A Star Is Born.
Yeah.
Where I was just like way after the fact, I'm like, why am I still talking about this movie? Oh, I must have really liked this movie.
Yeah, same. I think for me, it's probably Batman vs. Superman.
I hate you. I hate you so much.
I'm not even lying. And you know it. Oh, the last one.
God, Batman vs. Superman. One day they're going to remake it. You know that, right?
Yeah, with Robert Pattinson.
Oh, God. Yeah, I know we talked about it like a few weeks ago, but Robert Pattinson is going to be Batman. That's so weird.
Yeah, very, very happy to see what it looks like. Happy for him.
Me too.
Happy for the man. Happy for Rob.
Yeah. He deserves a win. Mm-hmm. He's had a lifetime of struggle.
Yeah. Anybody that does a Claire Denis film deserves to do like a superhero film afterwards just to cleanse themselves of that like grimy feeling of being in a film like that.
Yeah. Did you see High Life?
I've seen enough of it. I haven't seen the whole thing. But
what do you mean you've seen enough? How have you seen?
How do you think?
Blu-ray?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. It's fucked up, though.
Yeah. It's about sex in space with prisoners.
All right. I think I've seen that video.
Have you heard of French extremism?
Yes.
Yeah. It's like that. It is that. It is a French extremist film.
That's got to be great, like the first person to be called the extremist, but also be taken seriously as an artist.
Yeah.
Because they're like, all right, we know what everyone thinks this is going to mean, but it's not that. And we so believe in this person's like art that we're still going to call it that.
Is that what they think, though? I think French extremism might have come around as a derogatory term at first.
Well, then they owned it, right?
I guess. Or the film critics afterwards did. I don't know. Like, I don't know if French extremist filmmakers call themselves French extremists.
I hope they do. That would be wild. Yeah, they get stopped at the airport. All right. Rocket Man is good. See it.
See it in theater. See it multiple times.
See it in theater. Yeah, I actually might see this like again.
Yeah. Help it make more money than a Bohemian Rhapsody because it definitely deserves. Dude, if this doesn't get any love at the Oscars, I'm going to be so pissed.
Costume design for sure.
I hope so.
Taron
Egerton deserves at least a nomination.
It. Oh, yeah. He's great.
Sound editing, sound mixing. Anything that Bohemian Rhapsody was nominated for, this should just win for.
Yeah. And he, he was so like Elton, but not in a, you could just, like, he was acting, but he did not draw attention to himself at all.
Yeah.
He was not very showy.
Are you, comparing him to Rami Malek?
I'm not. I'm comparing him to other actors in like biopics where sometimes they like ham it up. They like do it big. And he really just like sunk into it. Like, I don't really look like Elton. I, you know, kind of sound like Elton. I'm just like,
he's doing his own version of Elton.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful. God damn. What a beautiful voice too. Did not expect that out of the Kingsman kid.
Very good. So I think we're all set on that. Watch it in the theaters.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What are we going to watch next week? Rob, I think it's, I mean, who knows when it'll happen, because I'll be out of the country.
I mean, they have movie theaters out of the country, right?
Right. Yeah. But I'll be 7 hours in front of you. So
we'll figure it out. You know, I don't think anyone's really clamoring for our take on this film, although I do think hopefully we'll have some clever quips, you know, that's what we're here for.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It'll definitely be like a spoiler review.
Absolutely.
Like, we'll spoil the shit out of it.
100%.
That's a good metric of like, hey, this movie is bad. We're going to spoil all of it for you.
Yeah. Just like with Hellboy. Like, dude, if you don't need to see this movie, we're just going to tell you what happens so that you actually don't need to see the movie. That's what we're here for, because we're your friends and we care about you.
Yeah, Hellboy. Did that make any money?
I don't think so. I don't think it made its budget back.
It did not. It lost. Its budget was $50 million. It made $43.3 million.
Ouch. Globally?
Deservedly so. Yeah, globally.
Oh, bummer. Poor David.
Yeah, poor David. Poor Ian. Yeah.
Just go watch Deadwood instead.
Yeah, that's the real solution. Mm-hmm. But Dark Phoenix next week, mayhaps. Maybe we'll do a special episode about something else. Who knows? I can't tell you the future, but I can tell you that my name is Dan Leo, and you can follow me on Twitter at The Dan Leo Show, Letterboxd D Leo. Don't try and find me on Facebook. Rob, who are you?
I'm Rob. You can follow me on all of the social media channels at Robert Jr. JR. Look me up on Facebook if you want. I dare you. You probably won't find me. You'll probably find my dad. So
I just discovered your dad had a Twitter, and I'm
secretly following him.
I have to like type in his name on like the search. And look at his tweets instead of follow, because I don't want him to know that I'm following what he's.
I'm gonna tell him that you're doing that now. So
I'm gonna block him. I'm gonna block your dad on Twitter immediately.
He listens to the podcast.
Oh, he does?
No, he doesn't. He's too disappointed to listen to our podcast.
Same with my parents. Yeah. Like, that's the one comfort I know, is that my parents are definitely not gonna listen to this. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, market saturation.
Right. Yeah, exactly. The key is having a podcast, because your parents don't know what podcasts are.
Exactly. And now that iTunes is dying, you know, how the fuck are they going to find it?
Yeah, exactly. They're not going to get Stitcher.
Yeah, they're
dead. You're not listening to this on Stitcher.
They think
listening to this on fucking Spotify.
They all think that Spotify is the same thing as LimeWire.
I mean, it kind of is.
But legal.
Like, it's LimeWire. Because think about, like, Spotify doesn't make any money. It loses money. Like, it loses a lot of money.
Yeah, just like Uber. That's how you run a business these days.
That doesn't make any sense. Like, this is whole, like, they built their model off, like, yeah, so how are you going to make money? Like, we'll get to that later.
It's about potential.
Nah, man, get to that first.
It's about potential. Hey, man, look at all this market share we can capture. Who gives a shit how we're going to monetize it?
Sure. Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah. That's why we're the only movie podcast.
Exactly. Because everyone else fucked up.
Yeah. We're losing money like wild over here.
Yeah, exactly. Please. We need Peter Thiel to give us some angel investment. Well, it's been fun hanging out with you nuts.
Yeah.
But we'll be back next week. So just hang on your nuts. I don't know.
You're going for it.
We're going nuts. Which we say that involves nuts?
I think you said it all.
Yeah. You're right. Just, I'll just do that whole bit.
We're just two nutty professors.
There you go. Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. we're getting there.
We'll come up with more nut puns next week. Don't worry.
Yeah. But until then.
Bye.
Bye.